Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And without delving into the outcomes, let's just dive into the content because we need to get this through. And I will reserve my comments, the outcome of the election for Friday, like I try to always do. That way, when we pay, I mean, there have been times where I really try to create these content shows where there's no snapshot of when this is being done in time. That way it can be picked up and played later on if I need to rebroadcast something. And if it is so well done that I don't know if I could do justice to that again, or even better yet, the contributions of having somebody like Tammy. Welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
Your contributions and asking the questions and bringing things up is really critical, and it actually helps highlight that. And down the road, I may not have somebody to actually do a co-host like what you're doing here, and I don't get that interplay, and I think the interplay when we do these types of things is far more enlightening because you're providing insights that really probably lend to some of the listeners. They're thinking the same things. And I know there's probably no doubt based on yesterday, because I try not to have the conversation of what we cover in between shows, because then we never do justice in allowing it to be, you know, provided to you in a raw form. And really, the real problem is that when I do those things, I think, you know, we cover in the raw form, we cover all of the details. But then when we try to recapture that, we skip over things because, well, we already said that. And if you don't do it in the raw form, then you end up losing things because in your head you edit those things and go, well, I don't need to bring that up because I already said it. And you think, well, I already said it in this conversation, because you're not keeping track of all of that. Especially, and this is one of the reasons why if you don't script, it's always best to do everything raw, because then you try to cover everything as best as possible. You may miss things, but in other ways, you actually, because you're going impromptu, you have this latitude of bringing up things in a raw form that you probably normally wouldn't do when you're just sitting down creating a script. So anyway, the debt is fraud, and let's continue invoking the power of prayer and reclaiming this republic. And as a matter of fact, anything on the spiritual level, whether that be fasting, offerings, what have you, and providing service. Folks, when you go out and provide service, you're doing, you know, service in his name, then that is sanctifying, and that is one way of kind of sanctifying what we need done. I could easily say, well, we need to, you know, fast and we need to pray, but let's not even, you know, let's not take service off the table. Let's make sure that you're aware of this, that if we go out and serve one another in his name, that is sanctifying these things that we do, you know, for these purposes. It's, I know I probably don't have to say this, but when you're fasting for this, you know, for reclaiming the Republic, if you're fasting and you contribute what, you know, you did without, because, you know, you would have probably spent $20 for, you know, the meals that you fasted and you contribute those, then that sacrifice actually sanctifies your efforts in, you know, trying to ask for his assistance in saving the Republic. Therefore, that's how the blessings actually are really more appropriately applied. And I don't know, should I continue, Tammy, or does that kind of cover it?
No, that covers it.
Okay. All right, good. So now we need to cover the Constitution, because that's what we're here to do. And so I'm kind of putting it out there to you. As we move forward, we were talking, actually, let's before we move forward, because we were just covering Article Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. And we were covering, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Go ahead. Any questions on that? Because there's more. So there's a lot more to cover. But bottom line, why is it that when states actually allow a business, why is it that they actually allow a business to become tyrannical? In other words, they basically enslave you, and the state tries to step back and say, you know, we're giving you latitude to do anything you think you need to do. And technically, the states aren't allowed to do that. They're not allowed to use corporations as agents to violate us.
Right. So the question I had for you previously, when we were not on the air, was what should have everyone done during COVID when they were violating
so all of our rights? Let's just use one example at a time, maybe. So there were lots of places, businesses, that were saying, we demand that you actually wear a mask. Now, businesses can't demand that you wear a mask. And as a matter of fact, if you have a reason why, let's say you have a lung disease and wearing a mask depletes you of the additional oxygen that you would gain by not having a mask. Now, technically, the people that are sick should be the ones wearing the mask.
Right.
Not the mass public. And as a matter of fact, the reality is that even though the mask doesn't protect you 100%, when you're wearing a mask in an environment where people may have the germs, it does diminish your ability to get the germs a little bit, but nothing in comparison to masking the person that's spewing those germs. And so I'm okay with people wanting to self-mask, that they should do that.
Absolutely.
And I'm okay with if the people actually create a law that says you don't have the right. Because remember, your rights begin where? With you, right? Your rights begin with you, but they end where?
With me.
No, they end where they can impact or take away the rights of somebody else.
Yeah, that's basically what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. So if I'm sick and I go out in public and I'm breathing the air and I infect somebody, does that person have a right of justice? Do they have a right to pursue justice? Because let's say they get sick and die. Now, was that callous murder?
I suppose they could, but I don't know how they would prove it.
Well, so nowadays, they could easily prove because they can go into the germ for you and the germ that infected them, and the genetics of those germs would probably be a match. Right, I mean, there are genetics, even with the coronavirus, they were able to go down the genetics of, okay, this is not the same coronavirus, so you didn't get it from this person. They've had that ability with genetics. The point is this, is that it's just the same as you're walking around with a, you know, you're walking into public, and you have this big, huge lance, and a lance is these, you know, well, a lance is technically this long pointy pole with a very sharp point at the end, or let's just say a big double broadsword. You're carrying that thing over your shoulder, and as you're walking around, you're just, you know, turning, and every time you turn that lance or that sword, you know, and maybe cut somebody's head off. Are you responsible for the harm you did?
Sure.
You are. It's the same thing when you go into public with germs. Can you do harm when you're sick?
I mean, sure.
Okay. Now, Can they make a law that you cannot leave your home if you're going to commit a crime? That's a stupid law, right?
Yeah.
Because if a person is going to commit a crime, nine times out of ten, you know, they don't have to leave their home to commit a crime. They could do it over the cybercrime, what have you. But my point is that it's like saying if you're going to commit a crime, you can't use guns. You know, I mean, those laws are just stupid. People have the liberty. They have the will to make their choices. I'm going to get a gun and I'm going to go commit this crime. And so we can't punish the cognitive. Have you ever seen the movie Minority Report?
Yeah.
Okay. So Minority Report was a group of, you know, these, I forget what you want to call them, these sightseers that could see if somebody was going to commit a crime. And their focus was strictly, you know, the death of people or committing a really bad crime. And so they would see this and they would call the police and the police would go in and arrest the person before the crime was committed. And because we got to a point in society that we couldn't question them. And then come to find out, you know, the whole point of the Minority Report was that there was corruption in the process. And so the question is, do we have to wait for the person to commit the crime? Or can we just say, you know, you're guilty before you've even committed that crime? And technically,
we have to wait for them.
That's right. So technically, when we tell people that they have to wear a mask because they could get somebody sick, if you're not infected or you don't think you've been infected and you think you're clean, then I think it's worth, you know, you can assume the risk and go out without a mask. But I believe that we do need to be able to hold people accountable to if they have caused harm. So if you actually go out and you get sick and then you find out that the people that you engaged in a couple of days ago while it was incubating and you were kind of helped spreading it while it was incubating and they got impacted and because you didn't know, that becomes problematic. But still, nonetheless, even though you may not know, there's still that risk of causing harm. And so does a person have a right to say, hey, you know, you should have been able to test yourself or you should have known because you got exposed to somebody. And even though you didn't have the symptoms, because sometimes these delays kind of, I don't want to say it convolutes things, but I do believe that if there's an opportunity that we can prove that somebody did something knowing or that they didn't care with malice, then that's where you actually have, you know, the ability to charge a greater crime. But if you go into public and it's a cold, you know, it's not corona, it's just a cold and you get people sick. Should those people who do get sick have the ability to say, hey, you caused me harm?
I just don't know how you'd ever prove that.
I understand. Let's just say, you know, we have the ability because we have that star. Have you ever watched Star Trek?
Mm-hmm.
Those scanners, and you know, boom, we now know. And so
I suppose if we had the ability to prove it, then yeah, sure. But there's so many germs everywhere, wherever we go. I just don't know how you'd ever prove that.
Well, so you're right. Bacterias, but viruses are not the same. And technically, most of the viruses, because I'm going to go down this conspiracy theory, I believe the majority of the viruses that have been inflicted upon society over probably the past century, a lot of them were concocted and delivered by people. I don't think that just the coronavirus was the outlier. Because we know that SARS and all of these things, they've been working on because the pharmaceutical company makes money when people die and they have to, you know, they get to generate a, what we'll call a vaccine. Right? Isn't that how they make billions? How much money was out there for creating a vaccine for COVID? This has been a huge, the COVID pandemic was a huge transfer of wealth from the people of the world to the pharmaceutical companies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So when we're talking viruses, viruses are, you know, it. How do you actually get a virus out in, you know, out in the world? It has to exist, right? And viruses have a very short shelf life, right? Mm-hmm. What's the shelf life of a virus if it's sitting in the sun or if it's just out in outside? Bacteria has the ability to continue to grow and, you know, grow and grow and grow. But viruses actually have, they create, if I remember correctly, they have this symbiotic relationship with their host. That's how they multiply and spread. Now, if I caught a bacterial infection, can I give that to you? Are there bacterias that can be harmful?
I mean, yeah, of course.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, strep throat is a bacteria, right? And once it's in you, you can communicate that to somebody. Now, I didn't want to go into medicine and all of this on this one issue. But the point is that they cannot create a law that forces everybody to protect themselves. That takes away your privilege and immunity to be able to make your own choices. It takes away, if you have a conscientious objection is not something that necessarily has to relate to whether you're going to war and killing somebody. Conscientious objection can be, you know, whether it be abortion, which also includes death. It could be, you know, of moral natures, of sex, or, you know, the conscientious objection could be, it could be mathematical. It doesn't matter. A person has a right and the freedom of expression. And the conscientious objection is really an exertion of that expression. I think this is wrong. I'm not going to participate in this. Every person has that right. But the point, I think, is we have to mature, because we've gotten away from a disciplined society where we actually take the responsibility ourselves to say, you know, I need to be a good contributor. And if I'm sick and I go out into public and I inflict, you know, this sickness or this ailment because it's contagious upon the public, then I have, you know, in the wake of my action, I have made a negative impact upon our society, maybe for a fraction of time, but it's still a negative impact. And if we're all trying to contribute to elevate and, you know, grow the productivity of society all, then we should actually be trying to consider and making those types of decisions. You know I need to go out and probably get some food and stuff, but I will, you know, not, and I'll ask somebody to help me out because I know I'm sick. Bottom line is that they can't create a law and make you do something. They can't do that. They can actually create laws to say if you've done something that's harmed somebody, then they can. I'm not saying I'm in favor of creating these laws, but they can't basically say you're guilty before you've done something and you have to wear a mask or you can't go out because you're guilty already.
Remember, it's like you're guilty of being sick before you're even sick.
Correct. Once you're sick, now you can be considered guilty of causing harm or, you know, the threat of harm. As a matter of fact, you know, if somebody had AIDS, and this could probably may have even been visible, or I should say may have actually occurred, where somebody knowingly had AIDS, went out and actually started having sex with as many people, women or whatever, they possibly could to infect them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
They could, and that's with malice. I mean, it's one thing to do it that you didn't know, and that would be more of a slap on the wrist. But if it's discovered that you are actually out harming people deliberately, that's almost like, you know, depraved indifference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is depraved indifference. So, you know, and that means that the crime and everything else is going to be far severe. Or I should say the punishment for that crime. So,
so we need to go back to the original question, because you haven't answered it yet.
Ah.
You got sidetracked.
Okay, so the original question is, what do we do?
They were
what do we do?
We were violating all of our rights. What should have every what should the people have done?
Well, so what the people should have done was they should have and actually we had a petition. We had a petition for Washington State. Forgive me, I got a frog. That actually called out Jay Inslee for trying to execute laws that took away our privileges and immunities, took away our ability to worship, took away our ability to assemble, took away our ability to engage in commerce. They started exerting laws that they had no authority to do. And so we had a petition that needed to go to the county commissioners, couldn't get the party, couldn't get anybody to do this. And so, you know, this was focused on Washington, but what you need to do is all you need is, and I think it's petition 5, we can create one with you, we can help you do one for your state that you actually drive these things into your county, because your county commissioners will make sure that, one, those laws aren't going to be enforced in your county, because the sheriff, they're going to direct the sheriff that we're not going after anybody because we're not mandating people have to wear a mask. You can't do that. Now, you can come after somebody, again, going back to if that person's sick and they do cause harm, then you can go after that person because mm-hmm. that's guilty. But not everybody's guilty. And so you can't create a law like that. So what you do is you get your county commissioners to actually, you know, one, protect you, and then two, you get your county commissioners to call upon all the rest of the counties. If you go through the petition process and these 8 steps, you first, your county commissioners sound the alarm amongst all the counties in the state and say, this law is unconstitutional, they're violating our rights, blah, blah, blah. And so you need to endorse this, and then after you send this out with your endorsement to call upon them to do the same thing, then the next step is you actually endorse this and send this up to the state house. If they're following the process, all these other counties will do the exact same thing. They'll endorse it and send it up to the state house.
If the county commissioners endorse it and send it up to the state house.
That is correct. If you really look at how this works, it almost creates a brush fire that actually just sweeps across the landscape of the state. Because it starts at one flashpoint, but it instantly jumps into every county. And if all of the counties that follow the law and follow this petition process and start exerting their authority to say, we demand that you actually comply to the Constitution and get rid of this law. If you don't, we're coming for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're
so gonna... what about all of the schools who enforced this mask nonsense and what about all of that?
Well, so schools can't create law. They're not legislators. So that law had to come from somewhere. So if it came from the federal government, then that law has to be stopped by the state house. The state house actually has to say, hey, hold on here, federal government. You know, the Department of Education cannot create a law. CDC cannot create a law. The only entity, because that's an executive law.
Well, it was just a mandate from the governor.
Well, so I understand that, but the original mandate came from the CDC and then the president, whether that was Donald Trump or whether Biden was the one that continued it, because Biden was continuing it. Biden was continuing people, no, it's not safe, it's not safe, and he was continuing the suppression. Even though mm-hmm. Trump went along with it, you know, because he said we're going to just kind of flatten the curb. And he basically said, well, he only called for a 2-week. And the states actually started running with it. We're going to run out of time here. But the states actually started running with it. So we're looking at this in hindsight, right? So we have 2020. The fact is the state houses, if they started embracing these things and basically, you know, pushing these down from on high, pushing these down upon the people from on high, then the state was actually, I'll just say, derelict in their job of holding the federal government accountable, because they should have recognized that those were unconstitutional laws. So we'll dive back into this when we come back, because I know that Tammy's ability to probably hear me is probably nil. So we'll be right back, folks, after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's kind of work through this again. So what ends up happening? What happened with COVID wasn't that Governor Gordon was working in a vacuum. That came from on high that you needed to do these things, and that came from the federal government. Now, it didn't come from Congress. It came from the executive branch. And so most people have kind of hailed this, you know, the turn, or I should say the overturning of the Chevron case, where the executive branch cannot, or I should say these bureaucracies cannot actually create law and send them down upon the states, right?
Right. So the governor should have just ignored it.
Well, so the what should have happened was actually the Congress should have stepped up and said, hold on, we think we smell a duck. We hear a duck, it's quacking. And we see a duck, so it must be a duck because we heard it and now we see it and we can hear it, smell it, and all these other things. We can actually reach out, touch it. This is a duck. It's a law. And Congress actually has the responsibility to ensure that only laws come from them, and that the only laws that come from them must be in pursuant to the Constitution or they're not applicable to the states. So what should have happened was Congress should have basically slapped down the bureaucracy and say, you can't do that. But if Congress felt that they wanted to do that, they created the law, then it's the president's job to actually slap them down and say, hold on here. This is not a derivative of any power that is granted the federal government. We don't have the power over health care. We don't have the power over anything like disease control or anything like that. We can't be spending that money, and the fact that those bureaucracies exist without the authority is all unconstitutional. This is why we literally have this huge, multi-armed monster of tyranny ruling us.
Mm-hmm. So if the president, if Congress doesn't do their job, and the president doesn't do his job, and the governors assume that they have the authority all to do all of this, and so then they move forward with the assumption that they have the authority to do these things.
Right. So what we have is a cascading event, and it's literally like we see, you know, the snow, or I should say, how the snow melts from the mountains and it trickles down into the streams and then into the rivers and then finally into the ocean. And so as we...
Yeah, so that's the question is, if nobody understands what the law is and that you can't do this, and then it comes down to school boards who are making these decisions that they don't have the authority to make because they
But the school board's not working in a bubble either. They're being directed by the tyrannical, multi-armed beast that everybody... So it's all trickling down. It didn't... The mask mandate did not begin, you know, before SARS. In other words, that was not the birth of the masks in schools. The birth of masks in schools was first the sign that SARS was here, or I should say COVID was here. And they saw we need to protect everybody. And they don't have that. They do not have that constitutional responsibility. Nevertheless, as it trickles down, it's Everybody's existence is dependent upon following the marching orders from all of this illegitimate government. The education system and its attachment to the federal government is illegitimate. The healthcare system and its attachment to the federal government is illegitimate. The energy sector, the states, companies that are producing coal, oil, or what have you in states and so forth, and this regulation coming from the federal government is illegitimate. The same thing with lumber and other resources and all of these things that they're doing is all illegitimate. Keeping that in perspective, all the states are just going along with this, and no, they're. It's almost like we've been living in this nightmare that everybody just accepts. So what has to happen is, because it's not like this is the only problem, right? COVID and the mask was not the only problem. And so, but this is just another symptom.
Blatantly put it in front of our faces.
Correct. I understand that. And this was an exercise of tyranny directly affecting us. And as a matter of fact, they destroyed businesses. They destroyed, you know, livelihoods. They killed people. And so one of the things that, you know, we have to do is we have to start at the bottom. We have to start to those people who are the greatest part of our government, who actually respond and work for us on a daily basis that we see in this. So our Republican form of government is a hybrid. Even though the federal government may have been created a long time ago, the basis of our government structure, literally today, based on the framework of the Constitution, starts at the county, and then it goes to the state, and then it goes to the federal government. So that is from the top, from we the people, down to the county, down to the state, and down to the federal government. So the federal government is not the top of our pecking order in government. The top government layer is the county. This is why we have to go and we have to educate our county commissioners to say, you must do these things. And we use these constitutional arguments to prove to them, and they go, oh, my gosh, you're absolutely right. We never saw this big picture. We're all waking up.
So what if you do go to the county commissioners with a petition, and they are still blind, and they still choose not to see? Then what do we, the people, do?
Okay, so this goes back to the 95 theses. Right? Because if it was just one issue that, you know, the Catholic Church was making money off of sin, this particular sin, then most people go, well, so big whoop. That doesn't affect us, you know, and is it really that bad? That's how people marginalize. That's one of the reasons why Martin Luther actually exposed the entire, you know, everything he possibly could in a comprehensive list to say, look at how bad it is. So when you go in to your county commissioners and you say, you know, because you only care about the masks, you don't care about the rest of the tyranny. You just think, I think this is wrong. And you don't see the bigger picture of how everything is wrong. Then they're just going to say, come on, masks, come on. You know, you're getting welfare. They're doing all of these other things. Or, you know, they're taking care of us. Well, they don't have the responsibility or authority to do any of that. But anyway, so it doesn't, it starts with one. It can be the mask or whatever. You have to go back in and actually hold them accountable, say, what are you going to do? And if they say, we're not going to do anything about that, then I go, okay. And I got another petition right here to call you out that you need to stop this invasion. Every county is being affected by invaders that actually either work or, you know, travel through. I mean, I can't think of a county in America that does not have or has had an invader, you know, go in and work or what have you. And so bottom line is you give them the invasion petition. You give them the petition over the unconstitutional international laws, petition two, undoing the UN and all international laws in America. You start going through all of the different petitions, because every single one is legitimate argument that this is tyranny. When you start doing this, either they wake up, because the campaign starts now. The election's over. The campaign starts now. We start petitioning your county commissioner, not with one, but with every single one. And we need to write more and more until they finally say, okay, or until the people say, the people have to look at the color-coded constitution and the table of tyranny, which we have, this table of tyranny and the color-coded constitution in its metaphorical state, because they're not complete. We don't have, the amount of time it takes for me to go through the EOs and all of these other things that are all violations to actually put my arms around the magnitude of violations is just ridiculous. But what we have, anybody can look at the color-coded constitution and the table of tyranny and go, oh my gosh, this is so bad. This is so bad. I mean, if you don't take that position, if we the people do not take that position, then we're done. We're done. But I believe that when people realize the magnitude of the tyranny and we start driving these petitions, many of these county commissioners are going to wake up. And this is one of the things we're finding in Washington State, where it's a blue state, but we're getting commissioners to actually say, we want to move and create these county committees on constitutional compliance and start moving this forward and start communicating with the counties within the state to take the state back. That is the battle plan. We have to actually do it one count. We got to get victory in one county. Then that county propagates it out to all of them. And then they actually start moving. And as that county starts moving, now we actually have this. This is a long game. This is a game. This is a movement that requires, the methodical push, 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 push. Because if you live in a county that is that corrupt, then what you're doing is you petition them and they ignore it, petition them and they ignore it. You're creating a historical pile of empirical data to basically attack these people long before the election comes up, and you're going to basically brutalize them in the public arena. Because you're going to, every time that name comes up, you go, yeah, look at this, look at the pile of tyranny that this person doesn't care about. Because we've petitioned and petitioned, they refuse to do their job. As a matter of fact, they've abdicated their job to the county attorney, to the county prosecutor, to the sheriff, or whomever, because they're hiding behind somebody else who said, we're not going to do that. We're not going to, as your representatives in this Republican form of government, we're not going to do this. And then you have to make them suffer by calling them out and helping everybody understand how bad these representatives are, and help people start understanding that this is a Republican form of government, not a judiciary, not a magistrate, not an executive. This is a Republican form of government. And you have the best chance of replacing and getting rid of every single one of those county commissioners when they come up for election. Because if you start today, 2 years from now, if you've actually done your job 2 years from now, that county commissioner that actually is going to be going up for election should be so beaten and so tired, they're going to say, I'm not even going to run because I don't even look good anymore. What I think would end up happening before that happens is they would probably change their tune and go, you know what? I finally get it. You're right. Before they leave office, they would probably just say, I accede. I basically acquiesce to this concept of what you're doing, and we're on board, and they actually start getting on board. Because if not, the only stubborn places are where they think they're untouchable, where they don't think that you can actually get rid of them. And so that's going to be the tough part. And we may actually have some, like Cheyenne and Casper, you may actually have hard, deep entrenched, we don't care because we know that the amount of people in this county is not significant enough to unseat us. We're that protected. That's where all these other counties can actually start coming in, because once they take over the state, And once they take back, you know, the Constitution and all these other things, then they actually can have the State House clean up these little bastions in Wyoming. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So I've asked you this question before, but I'm going to ask it again because I think whoever's listening will want to know this again. So when starting with petitions, which ones do you think are the most important ones to start with?
The petitions.
Yes.
I think that the petition that is the most appealing to the people in the particular time and day, you know, because it varies. You know, just mm-hmm. do a consensus and say, okay, we need to petition our county commissioners and we need to start this attack. Go to, you know,
maybe the invasion one right now.
It could be the invasion one. If that's what is the greatest appeal in your county, you know, because more people are complaining about the invasion and what the heck is going on that southern border or the economy or whatever, you know. And as a matter of fact, there may be something that, you know, is rising up that we don't have a petition for. We have a petition for the stealing of our land or allowing foreign entities to buy up our land. All of those types of petitions, you know, all of those issues are starting to bubble up. Whatever you have the most, because you want to get as many people coming to the table because you've got the little, you know, that little flavor, that little taste that they're thirsty for.
Mm-hmm.
And so you bring them to the table so that then they kind of understand what you're doing, and then you can help them understand the importance of all these other things. This is where we start making the case to say, when you look at the conservative, because this is on Mondays and Fridays, I've been harping on this for a long time, and I'm continuing to harp on this, that in the conservative arena, we are divided, and we actually think that this issue is holier than these other issues. And that's not the case, because as long as we make one issue holier than the rest of the Constitution, then we've actually muddied the Constitution. We're turning our back on the entire Constitution. If we all give up, you know, the myopic view and say we demand full compliance, then every single one of our problems gets solved. But if we actually maintain the myopic view, a single focus on one issue here, these people single focus, because we're not uniting and because we're divided, we are failing. So when we look at these health freedom, abortion, the Second Amendment rights, when we look at these myopic groups, because they have this great appeal towards a certain audience, then they are a huge part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So
which ones would you start with?
Which one would I start with? I think the common one is the southern border, because that affects our economy. It affects our culture. I mean, we're being overran, and I think that's one that I think is important. I think healthcare is another one, especially getting ready for the next pandemic. I think that there's plenty of petitions that you can get started with, but you got to start with one first, but you actually have to have a plan to get back in there with the next one and the next one and the next one. Because every time you do this, you're actually creating this case of here is how bad it is. And somebody's going to come along and say, well, how many more do you have? And you say, we have hundreds.
We'll just keep going.
We have hundreds until everybody just shifts from saying, you know, this petition, and just starts chanting full compliance of the Constitution, full compliance of the Constitution. Now it is a succinct message that is being, you know, sent, and it will be received succinctly by your county commissioners, that we're no longer just caring about one issue. We care, because that's what every single one of these is. That's why every single petition has within its expectations. The first expectation is you got to create a constitutional compliance committee. at the county level. Why? Why are you doing that? So that you actually have people that are going through and scrubbing, one, the legitimate constitution, as well as what are the legitimate laws or what are the legitimate things that we have in our government, the audit and all of that. So as they start doing this, they're actually breaking through all of the crust and all the crud and saying, hey, hold on here. None of this belongs. Now we're actually, because until you get your arms around the problem and you start really fighting the whole problem and you're not fighting the little tentacle or the little pinky of this multi-armed Leviathan, now we actually have a standing chance of killing it.
Yeah, that, to me, while I agree with you that this needs to happen, if I feel like every single group would have to have a chairman like yourself in order for it to actually be effective, because nobody seems to understand the Constitution.
Well, and as a matter of fact, most people, because we hear, unfortunately, we hear conservative entertainers like Mark Levin tell people it's complicated, folks, and just got to leave it to us lawyers so that we can, you know, take care of you. And I'm here to tell you, folks, it's not that complicated. If they don't have the authority to do it, they can't be meddling with it. They shouldn't be involved in it at all. And that's why we go through these documents, because you hear that simplicity from George Nicholas. You hear that simplicity from James Madison. Even John Marshall, during the ratification debates, even though he became a corrupt, you know, chief justice, even John Marshall was very succinct and clear. They can only do those things that have been delegated to them. This was the current theme. Now, I know Madison was a brilliant man, and one of the things he pointed out was the ratification debates were the only way we could actually, you know, the only authority in understanding the Constitution, what's constitutional. We have to use the ratification debates, not the Federalist Papers, not, you know, the interpretation of judges, how it was actually legally defined to the states. And so as we, you know, go through those things, I know Madison, you know, I don't think he created a definitized constitution. And that's one of the things we want this committee to do. We want the committee to actually go through the constitution, and whoever's going to be the first committee, I'm really looking forward to helping them do this, because we're going to go through every line in the constitution. And if there is clarity in any of the ratification debates on that particular line, like the supremacy clause, then what we're going to do is we're going to create a footnote, or I should say a series of footnotes that will take you to the page of all of the definitions that were provided by the Federalists on what the Supremacy Clause meant. That way it is clear, because even though you may have 17 pages on the Supremacy Clause of how it was defined by the different framers or by the different Federalists at that time, you will not find any conflicts in how it was being described. They were literally describing it in the exact same way. They just used different words. But now that we've actually captured that, so that when you read through this line and then you go read the ratification, we guess, oh my gosh, wow, that is really clear. Now you've taken away any judge of being able to say, well, I interpret this to say this. Now we actually have what they said and how it was to be interpreted, or how it was defined, not interpreted, how it was literally defined at that time. This is exactly what this means. Then you take away the judge's ability to even put their finger on the scale and say, we see it this way, so we're going to give favor to this side of the scale. Now it takes that away from them. Now we're going to realize that the federal justice system can be restored to what its original intent was prior to John Marshall being seated. where they couldn't make law. They couldn't, you know, be active. They were a passive system, and they basically judged everything based on fact and law. It, what, you know, the contract. When we say fact and law, we have to base it on the, you know, how the Constitution was defined. That is the law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So anyway, back to the privileges and immunities, though. When we look at how corporations are actually violating our rights left and right, I'm going to pick on Facebook. We have a right to express ourselves, and Facebook created a platform. Now, is that an open public forum platform?
Mm-hmm.
It's an open public forum platform. So can Facebook actually create community standards that take away your right of expression?
No.
No, they can't. So every time a person has a post taken down off of Facebook, that should be an incident reported to the state legislature, to where the state legislature goes to Facebook and says, you violated this citizen's right. It's one thing for Facebook to say what this person has done is libeling themselves or they're doing some kind of harm. Now, it's one thing to say you can't put obscenities there because it's an open public forum. And there are obscenity laws. That's okay. But they can't, because they don't like what you said or their fact checkers didn't agree with you. They can't take it down. And if they do that, and this is how every state could actually start basically just roasting Facebook and just taking all their money, because as they fine them for violating your rights, because, you know, when we look at somebody that was denied their right to vote, you know, if you actually find somebody that was guilty of denying, you know, basically intimidating somebody that they couldn't vote, so that they weren't allowed, or to actually removing somebody from the polls. That's an exercise of your right. Your expression on in social media is a right. If it's social, if it's an open public social media, and you have a right to say something, you should actually be able to have that statement, and that statement should actually stand. If you libel somebody, you should be held accountable to that. But if if it's harmful or it discredits somebody or what have you, you should be held accountable. And that should stand so everybody, you crossed the line on that one. That was a personal attack. And this would actually help us start realizing the difference between personal attacks and actually substantive arguments. You know, that you're throwing out the facts. This person did this, this, and this. Now, this person made me feel bad. You're mean, you know. But when we actually start holding corporations accountable, because they cannot create or enforce any law that abridges our privileges and immunities. And because they're doing that, the state has the responsibility to come in and say, stop. This is a right that cannot be abridged. Period.
So each state would just...
Every state has the responsibility because of the 14th Amendment, because it says this is the supreme law of no state shall make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a citizen. That's the supreme law, folks. And so they cannot enforce any law, and they cannot allow corporations operating in their state that's denying you that. Anyway, if there's a question on that, then by all means, send me a note or what have you. But we'll bring this back up in our next episode. God bless. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.